Thank you for tuning into the VF1 show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to the show, the VF1 show. I'm Vincenzo, one of your hosts. On the other side is my lovely host, co-host, VF Castro. And today we are going to solely focus on the shit show that was or is or was the Australian Grand Prix. That's it. That's the intro because I really have nothing else to say other than we're going to talk about it. Before we get into it, before I introduce my co-host, be sure to give us a follow over on your favorite podcast player. Give us a rating and a review, 5 stars, because that really helps us out a lot and gets this into the ears of all the new people. We want you all to hear us, hear our opinions every week. Okay, really, I'm not going to plead with you. I'm just going to introduce VF Castro. How are you, V?
I feel like I'm recovered from that race. I genuinely feel like I hardly drink and that race felt like a hangover. How are you?
I'm glad you're recovered because as a Mercedes fan, clearly were able to recover. You had something, bright spots to come home with, or a bright spot to come home with. Whereas me on the other side of the coin, really, I don't feel like there was anything bright about that day in Australia. But yeah, that it's a good week. It's a good week. My daughter's turning one. I don't know if I feel old or if I'm just like, where has the time gone or what's going on, but it's a bright week other than what happened in the Australian Grand Prix.
I don't even know how to start unpacking this thing. If it could have gone wrong, it went wrong in this race. And I don't know. I think we look at the timeline of the race. All of this started when Alex Albon crashed into the barrier on, what was it, lap 6, 7? So
don't skip over that for a second. Let's dive into that for 1 second. I've heard a lot of mixed thoughts on that crash and should it have gotten red flag. At first, I said the same thing. I kind of said that to myself, like, why are we red? What is going on here? What does this need a red flag for? Some gravel on the track? Like, okay, I guess. But upon further review, I actually felt like that was probably very warranted. There was damage to the barrier. Albon actually bounced out back into, I mean, he was kind of right there in the racing line. There was a big cloud of dust. Once you listen to the radios, some of the drivers couldn't see through that cloud of dust, or how close they were to actually, you know, Albon, the car. So I actually did not mind that one.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, even Gasly and Hulkenberg, they said they had very little reaction time. They passed that incident at full speed. Hulkenberg said that was seriously scary. I mean, thank God nothing happened, but this is a nightmare scenario. You've come around a blind corner in a street circuit. So yeah, I mean, I think most F1 fans who watched enough races know that once there's damage to a barrier, that's a major safety concern. So you have to fix that, one. Two, when there's that much gravel in the road, I just feel like that was warranted red flag. Of course, lots of drivers disagree, but I think when you actually look at what happened, it was fair. But I think that later on in the race, other things were just happening and kind of just breaking down. And what was it? Lap 54, Kevin Magnussen's right rear tire separated from the rim after he hit the wall. Debris stopped the race. Stewards decided to, that's when, you know, the craziest shit happened after that. But yeah, if anything could have gone wrong in this race, it went wrong. And it all continued to, I think each red flag continued to make the rest of the race that much worse. And it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah. I guess we should probably talk about or just briefly mention the, was it lap, actually it was lap one, wasn't it? The lap one incident where Charles Leclerc was bumped at turn three by Lance Stroll. He spun off into the gravel. His race was over before it even started.
Yeah.
That's where the first safety car came out, right? So the race ended up going, it was under safety car till lap four when the race restarted. Then Albon has his crash on lap seven. The race ends up getting red flagged. I know there was some stuff going on there where Russell had changed his tires, had just changed his tires under safety car after the Albon incident. And Lewis stayed out. Did Lewis stay out? Yeah, Lewis stayed out. He was in the lead, which was cool to see Lewis in the lead for a while. And then they red flagged the race, and there was a little bit of, I think, Russell feeling like he got screwed because, I don't know, I felt like maybe he pit too early, whatever. And then Hamilton, you know, had his lead for a little bit. He had his lead at the second, I think it was, I forgot what lead, what lap he lost it. But it was cool. I thought it was fun to see, you know, Hamilton in the lead for a while. When Max finally came by and passed him, that thing still looks like a rocket ship. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, I tweeted this, just to interject real quick. I tweeted this, that to be fair, Russell had the pit stop and tire advantage over Lewis and Zandvoort last season.
Sure.
So, I mean, sometimes you get the luck of the draw, sometimes you don't.
You're spot on. I think that was completely just, it wasn't the wrong call. It was just one of them was going to get called in at that point and one of them wasn't.
Yeah.
Fantastic, you know, great strategy management by Mercedes. One of them will get called in, one of them won't. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Russell, I don't know. I said this on another podcast that I was actually guesting on yesterday, where I feel like Russell's gotten a little bit whiny with some of his calls. I like Russell. I've actually started to like him a lot more. Sometimes his radio calls seem a little bit, you know, whiny. Like, why are you telling me to manage my tires, but my teammate's pushing me, or he's, you know, he's still running. You know, it's like, all right, George, just drive the damn car. But I get it. I get it too. So that was cool to see. I mean, right from the beginning, Mercedes showed they were going to be pushing in this race. Cooler temperatures seem to really mean good things for Mercedes, and they took advantage of that. They took advantage of Max's wheel spin at the lead of the race. George took off like a bat out of hell. You know, Hamilton as well. So that was awesome. I really enjoyed seeing that. That was one of the bright spots, I would say, of the race for me.
Yeah.
But I you know, and obviously we'll talk a little, we're going to get into the crux of the matter here soon, but I think overall the race was, I don't know if boring is the right word, but it was pretty uneventful. If we take out the red flag situations, it wasn't super exciting, right? Like, it was a decent race, but it wasn't something that was like, wow, that was a legendary race. Of course, that leads us into all of the red flagging. And this was a 3 red flag race. We've never seen that in Formula One ever. This is the first time we've ever seen a 3 red flag race. And actually, there was a 4th red flag after the race was over. I don't know if you noticed that, because Magnussen's car stopped on track. Or was it Magnussen? Hulkenberg's car stopped on track. Did you see that when they were doing like their cool down laps? They actually red flagged it again. It didn't count as a red flag, but like, it was just kind of funny.
Why did that not count? I don't know. I think the Carlos Sainz penalty was one of the stupidest things you could.
Is that where you want to go right now?
That is where I want to go right now, because that annoys me. On a lap, okay, that doesn't even count, you're going to continue to count a penalty.
All right, so let's set the stage, and then you can dive in. I'm going to set the stage for everybody, and then you talk about it.
Well,
Verstappen leads in the closing stages of this race, a little over 10 seconds over Hamilton, which 10 seconds, I guess, seems like a close race right now in terms of what Red Bull's been putting up. So He's got about a 10-second lead over Hamilton. The race gets red flagged because Magnussen's right rear wheel had made contact with the wall at turn two. The tire just detached from the wheel. The entire tire was just off. Debris went flying into the... He damaged his rear suspension, had a bunch of issues. He was able to... I believe he was able to limp himself back or limp himself into a safe spot. Red flag. Race restarted. Max keeps the lead. The cars get to turn one and Sainz pushes Fernando into a spin. It was the final lap. So they started it. Final lap. Restart. Minus the cars that had been eliminated, which at this point was what, eight cars, I think, had been eliminated from the race. I think we only finished with, I believe it was 12. 12 cars finished the race. So at this point, you've got eight cars out. And they put the cars in order of the previous start, meaning Sainz was behind Alonso, third, fourth. They didn't allow him to keep that, to keep the advantage that he got after causing the spin. The reason for it, what they said, was because they hadn't completed a sector, and we heard this over and over on the broadcast, right? Because a sector wasn't completed, there's no reference point as to where the drivers are, which has always been a strange kind of ruling for me, but whatever, let's just go with it at this point.
Well,
before Sainz goes out, before they go out for that final restart, the stewards decide that Carlos Sainz gets a 5-second penalty, which with a standing restart like that means he's effectively in last place, 12th place. There's no way he can really recover 5 seconds of time in a single lap that was behind a safety car anyway. So the race ended under a safety car. In a final lap situation, Carlos finishes 12th. He loses out on that. The final race classification was Verstappen from Hamilton. Alonso Stroll was 4th. Perez 5th. Surprisingly, Lando Norris 6th. Hülkenberg 7th. Oscar Piastri got his first points at 8. Zhou Guan Yu at 9. And Yuki Tsunoda in the points at 10th. And there's only two non-points finishers, Bottas and Sainz. The rest of them all DNF'd. So that was the race. That was it. That was what happened on the last, which is crazy that I just talked about it. Like, there was so much action. It really wasn't a ton of on-track action. It was a lot of just stuff that happened after the fact. They completely eliminated that lap that happened, or the start of that lap that happened, that Sainz bumped Alonso out.
Yeah.
I need to take a breath. So I'm going to let you kind of go into a little bit of what happened and what you think.
It was a very chaotic race, and Fred Vasseur was mad because he said that it took them, 5 minutes to make this decision, and that the FIA didn't let Carlos plead his case and say what happened. Vasseur said, and to have a look at the data, you can look at the data and know if Carlos was in a panic mode, if he had already hit the brakes. Fernando said the penalty was a bit harsh. I think in this situation, when it won't impact the Alonso result, it makes sense. So for a race as chaotic as this, I felt like that was just a very sort of ticky-tacky sort of penalty on Sainz. I mean, it pushed them out of points for sure, and they needed the points. And all that aside, it didn't necessarily, I think if anything, the restart, their decision to have a sprint race essentially to end the race that caused millions of dollars of unnecessary damage, which they should have to reimburse teams for, again, imposing that penalty is just, I don't understand it. And I've had people try to explain their side to me and say, oh, it's legitimate penalty. And it's just like, well, their decision to end the race the way they did, it shouldn't have happened. All that should not have happened. Let's just put it that way. So I don't know. The FIA, they can have their reasoning for why they did what they did. But again, not allowing Carlos to explain his side, it's not a good look for the FIA. I think they continually sort of make things up as they go. A lot of things that they do, a lot of the penalties, they don't make sense. Everybody knows it.
And I hate to go conspiracy. I really do. This is not what I'm trying to go at, but if you want to make a race more exciting or you want to make the event more exciting, don't you think that the cars themselves need to change? Something needs to change with the cars. Like, they're too big for these tracks, which leads me to the, you know, to what happened. But these cars are just too big for these tracks. We're on a street circuit, and you're asking these guys to yet again, for a fourth time, restart, go into a corner, all bunched up, which again, NASCAR, it's fine because the cars can bump each other, and that's part of the, you know, racing there. But in Formula One, it's not. We're going in, we're racing into this corner. Someone's going to hit one another. It's going to happen. That's the nature of a restart in all cars going into that one corner, jostling for position. I'm not saying that Carlos Sainz wasn't completely at fault, or that, yes, in different circumstances, it's absolutely a penalty. But if that was a lap one, turn one situation, all at the start, all cars are going into that corner, just like we saw, would they have penalized him the same way? And if they did penalize him the same way, a 5 second, he would have had the entire race to make that up. He had zero ability to make up that 5 second penalty. It was essentially, I saw someone write this, it was like a black flag. Your day's done. I mean, there's no way he actually should have even bothered going back out there for the restart with the 5 second penalty, right? Like, obviously he's going to go out there to try and do whatever he can, but it was almost pointless to even go back out there, right? And that to me is like, that's the biggest issue. That's the biggest issue, is you, what you're trying to do is have this manufactured excitement. We saw the same thing in Abu Dhabi 21, manufactured excitement that kind of backfires. You know, three red flags, fine. One of them, I'm fine with. And I'm fine with the, like, even the last one, if you wanted to red flag for the last, that last one, fine. But then just let them do a rolling, you know, rolling start after the safety car gets off the track. You don't need to do another standing start. And I think Max Verstappen, actually, there's a quote where Max was like, there was no need for a standing start. You're inviting what happened to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and on top of it, we ended the race under a red flag anyway, or under a safety car anyway. So it wasn't like you alleviated that issue. You know, if the problem here was, oh my God, we can't end these races under a safety car. Okay, but you did anyway. So why didn't you just end it? Why didn't you just run the red flag, not the red flag, but keep the safety car out, let them clean up the track, whatever had to happen. You know, you start looking at that and you're like, these decisions are just asinine. And if I'm Formula One, I'm saying to the FIA, you're making us look like ass. We are looking like an amateur freaking, you know, series racing in the backwoods. But this is the pinnacle of motorsport, and these are the types of issues that we have week in and week out now. Now we have FIA things that we're dealing with. I understand FIA situations have dominated F1 historically. This is not new, but it feels like it's a lot of like just stupid decisions. Not common sense decisions to make more spectacle that actually just become the spectacle. Because that's, you know, you're not, the spectacle, like you said, should be the racing. It shouldn't be the decisions that are made on the track, or, you know, by the stewards or by the race director. Like, they shouldn't be the ones that are the main character of the day the next day. Nobody is talking about Max Verstappen winning again. Nobody is talking about Lewis Hamilton getting second place, getting a podium. Nobody is talking about the fact that Fernando Alonso is on the podium and there's three champions, world champions on the podium, and we haven't had that in, you know, 20 some odd years, or I'm sorry, 30 some odd years since it was, I believe, Senna, Prost, and I'm going to say Mansell, but I don't. Anyway, like, no one's talking about those storylines. Everyone's just saying, what a shit show. And like, is at the end of the day, is that what you want? If you're Formula One, is that what you're looking for? Because I wouldn't, if I own the sport, or if I'm running the sport.
Yeah, absolutely not. you know, to extrapolate on that Verstappen quote in the interview, he said that, I don't think we needed the second red flag that could have been conducted under a VSC period or worse, upgraded to a full safety car. He continued and said, it left a lot of drivers confused. If we had a normal rolling start, we would not have had all these shunts and we would have had a normal finish. So the FIA created the problems themselves. The stewards then released a statement saying, we do consider that part of the problem is the regulation that permits the lead car to set the pace. Even the restart is for a standing start from the pit lane as opposed to a rolling start. This should perhaps be looked at in the future to see if this is appropriate for a restart of this nature. It's like they continue to make the same kind of, you know, no shit type statements. It's never like, okay, we have to take personal accountability and responsibility for what just happened. This should not happen at this level. Like you said, this is the pinnacle of motorsports. Why does this shit continue to happen? There were, between Fernando Alonso, Max Verstappen, and Lewis Hamilton, 11 titles on that podium. And yet, that was even overshadowed by the fact that Mercedes wasn't even there celebrating. They said that it was because there was a safety breach and that they were trying to protect the garage. And apparently some F3 equipment was looted and stolen. There was somebody walking out of the venue with the front end. I don't know if you saw that clip, but how did that happen?
I saw that there was people on the track that shouldn't have been. There was at one point.
Yeah. But then also it's like, how do they not secure these garages? How do they not secure the pit lane? Everything from the FIA down to the race organizers, it was just a colossal breakdown. And yeah, like I said, there's so many things that we should be talking about right now, but we're not, because it's just, unfortunately, these things are overshadowed by the chaos that ensued. And I don't know. I don't know where to kind of go from here.
It's definitely not a question I think that, you know, we will answer. I think it's a question that that Formula One needs to ask itself or ask the FIA and say, you know, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? By the way, the last time we had a podium of three world champions was Hungary 2018, Hamilton, Vettel, Raikkonen. So my bad. If you are a Formula One executive looking at this kind of stuff, I'm not sure how you come away from that race saying that was exciting or that was great. I don't see it.
Yeah. The thing that I mainly take away from that track is Hamilton. He was talking on the radio to his race engineer, and he said, there's people on the track, man, some fans have got on. Like, do these fans not realize how fast these cars are going? Somebody could have died. With all the incidents that happened during that race, and then you still have fans walking on the track, like, or trying to get on the track at such high speeds. Like, what the hell are you doing?
Is that more on the promoter? Is that an FIA thing? I don't know. I mean, yeah. I think I'll give, and I guess even if I do give the FIA a pass on that one and say, okay, that's not your fault, that's the promoter's fault. But then it kind of does come back on the FIA, because doesn't the FIA have to certify these tracks? Aren't they supposed to say, yes, this is a viable place to race, this is a safe place to race these types of cars? I mean, again, I'm less upset about that than everything else that happened. I am upset about it. It just seems like the fact that there's so many issues that have nothing to do with racing, yeah, and that we're talking about them today, that's actually what pisses me off the most.
Well, organizers of the race have been and found a breach of the FIA International Safety Code. So obviously the FIA has said, we're putting the onus on the organizers. Okay, we can check that box. But yeah, the fact that we're talking about all the sidebar, all the shit show that happened and not the race itself. We're not talking about how, wow, George Russell and Lewis Hamilton looked powerful. They were leading the race. Each of them had a race lead. Lewis Hamilton, I think he had 3.5, he led for 3.5 laps before getting, you know, before Red Bull's DRS did what Red Bull's DRS does. So we should be talking about that. We should be talking about all of the adjustments these cars these teams are making to compete. We should be talking about how, congratulations, McLaren, you're finally in the points. I guess they got tired of hearing us talk shit about, you know, saying that they have as many points as Daniel Ricciardo, who got theirs to sit out the season. So that's the stuff we should be talking about. That's the entertaining stuff. Instead, we're talking about, like, wow, this sport makes how much money? This sport has how many fans around the world watching? This sport has a reality show documentary series that follows them around. Like, and this goes with the conspiracy theory. We don't like we don't subscribe to conspiracy theories, but people are actually saying right now that, was this by design to create more drama for the show? And the fact that people are even saying that shows what a shit show it actually was.
And I don't subscribe to that either, right? Like, I definitely don't subscribe to the fact that, like, oh, this is done for Netflix. Like, I definitely don't think that's the case. I do believe, though, or I do think that what's happening is you're getting to a crossroads, right? I think I've said this almost every episode this season. It's like you're always at this crossroads. You're at this point where, are you delivering to your audience what you promised them? And if the promises are drama through Drive to Survive, because that's where people are probably, you know, are coming from, how are you delivering that? And is it being delivered in a way like what we're seeing, where, well, we've got to manufacture some sort of drama, well, we got to manufacture some sort of, you know, craziness here? I get concerned that it's just not turning out the way it was intended. I mean, there's always, right? We always have good intentions when we start something, or we go about, okay, this Drive to Survive thing is going to help us grow our brand. Awesome. But then what happens, right? If you had a crystal ball to look, you know, 7-10 years into the future, you know, would you have made the same decision? And obviously for the time, it was the right call. Hey, we need to grow the sport. We need to make more money. We need to get more eyeballs on this. But I still don't think that the decisions are being made for more drama on the show. I think that they're just being made just to create a more quote unquote exciting show for people to watch, you know, during the race week. Because when you come to a race, or when you watch a race, you probably don't really realize that it's a lot of sitting around and watching a car go by once, and then you're going to see him again in a minute and 20 seconds, or a minute and 30 seconds, or whatever the lap time is, right? So that's, you don't get that from Drive to Survive. You have no idea. Now, the reason why I say that, and which some people will be like, well, any fan would know that that's how it works. Well, not really. I mean, there's a lot of these people, new fans that have never been to a race before. They don't really realize what it's going to be like. And so how do you create, or somebody who turns on a race for the first time, you're not getting the same vibe. Yeah, there's more action on a television screen than there is at a race itself, because it's showing you constant action, but there's no one explaining to you how things work. And you're not in the paddock. You're not following the drivers around. You're not getting these little confessional cut scenes. Like, all that stuff doesn't exist. So if you're brand new and watching this, you're like, okay, I don't understand what I'm watching, or I don't really, what's going on? Oh, drama, red flag. Oh my God, that's crazy. Like, now all of a sudden you're peaked, right? And I want to draw a parallel to YouTube for a second. So my wife, maybe 7 years ago, was at YouTube camp. She's been on YouTube for like 13 years. And she was at a YouTube camp with YouTube in New York. And when she came back, she told me a little bit about the formula. And this was at the time. It probably is common sense now, or common knowledge for YouTubers now. But at the time, it was fairly new-ish. And the idea was, every so often, you had to give viewers something that would keep their attention for the next couple minutes, right? So they start your video and maybe the intro's a little bit on the long side, or maybe it's like a minute and 2 minutes. And at 2 minutes, make a change, do something, make a loud noise on the screen, you know, introduce something completely different, say something, say a word, anything just to kind of shake up, you know, or clap on the screen to make the viewer engage again, right? Take them out of the trance of that first 2 minutes and re-engage them. And you have to, and they actually said, you know, to do that every so often in your video to keep people watching for the entire length of the video. And this Australian GP situation kind of reminded me of that, because I was like, oh, well, if you're watching it and you're like, all right, this is getting kind of bored. Oh, boom, there's a red flag. Oh my God, excitement. Oh my God, what's happening? Oh my goodness. And then the race is going on again. And, oh my God, another red flag. I'm gonna sit here and watch what's going to happen again. And then, oh my God, it happened again. Like, now I just watched the whole race because of these red flags that came up. And it's like, oh my goodness, there's something major happened. And it changed my, kind of snapped me out of my phase for a second, right? I don't know. Maybe I'm completely off base on that, but I was like, that's interesting. That's an interesting formula to follow if I'm directing the race.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think at this point, anything goes, really. And again, we say we don't subscribe to conspiracy theories, but at the same time, it's like, here we are talking about our opinions on, you know, why this happened or why that happened, or our, you know, opinions on every aspect of the race. And was it intended to draw, you know, viewers or ratings or whatever it was or not? These are the things that we shouldn't even have to talk about. It's one thing to say, for example, Toto Wolff talking about Lewis. He said, if Lewis wants to win another championship, he needs to make sure that he has the car. If we cannot demonstrate that we're able to give him a car in the next couple of years, then he needs to look elsewhere. I don't think he's doing it at that state, but I will have no grudge if that happens in a year or two. That's the kind of stuff we should be talking about. You know, he's in contract talks right now with an extension with Mercedes. Mercedes is obviously going in the right direction this year. And that's the stuff we should be talking about. Instead, we're talking about this race. And we're talking about everything that went wrong. And now it's kind of taking people down these tunnels of conspiracy theories and why this happened and why that happened. And it's just, that's not good for a sport that is trying to continuously grow, especially in the United States. And especially for a race time that was at, you know, 1 a.m. Eastern, I think there was, 500 and something thousand people watching. There was 556,000 viewers. So you're trying to grow the base. You're trying to, only really F1 diehards stayed up that late to watch that race. A lot of people, they went out, they're like, I don't care, I'll watch it in the morning when it airs. And you know, that's okay. But if you're trying to get people to become diehard F1 fans, where you basically cancel your Saturday night plans and say, I'm staying home or I'm coming home early from the bars or whatever to watch this race, and then have all these delays to the point where these people who do, you know, say on the East Coast, end up going to bed at like 3:30 in the morning, that messes up your whole Sunday. A lot of people messed up their whole Monday. Or at least their, you know, Monday start. That's a lot of commitment asking somebody to really just shuffle around their schedule for the weekend to make time for this race. And then to have the race be like that. So again, we should be talking about, holy crap, could Lewis Hamilton possibly be leaving Mercedes? I don't think he would, but, you know, these are the theories that people should be, you know, creating right now, not, oh, are they creating drama for Drive to Survive? Because we know the Drive to Survive, we know that they've been called out in the past for cutting up footage and placing it here and there for dramatic effect. And I can only imagine what this race is going to look like on that DTS episode. But it's like, we saw it. We were there. You know, not physically there, but we saw what happened in real time. We don't need the dramatics of it kind of recapped on a TV show. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of at that place right now where F1 needs to sit down with the FIA and have a very serious conversation about how to sort through these issues. F1 is making the FIA a tremendous amount of money right now. They should be sitting there and creating their sporting regulations based off, and I say this almost every episode, preemptively planning for everything that could go wrong. They're not doing that. And you talk about the cars are getting too big for these tracks. Everybody knows that. When I was driving COTA, I was like, okay, I can see this obviously works because these are wider tracks. But when you got around the S's and you got around, you know, a couple of the sharp turns, I'm like, yeah, I can see why a crash has happened here. I can see why George Russell pushed signs off at this at turn one. I can see that. But, you know, it's if I can figure that out, why can't the FIA? You know what I mean? Why is it that we continue having to relitigate this every single week?
I mean, that's a very good question. Why are we relitigating something that we shouldn't, and we have no, we really have no business, you know, doing? We don't get paid for that. There's people that get paid a lot of money to make those decisions, and it's like, just week in and week out, you're making these decisions that just don't seem to make sense, quite frankly. This was a really disappointing overall. This was just a really disappointing race. Positives to come out of it, something that didn't come out of it was Pierre Gasly got away unscathed in terms of penalty points. And this is actually interesting too. And again, I don't like that this is how it happens, but basically he took out his own teammate, and anybody else would have gotten a penalty for that, right? If it was Hamilton, Verstappen, Sainz, anybody would have gotten a penalty for what he did to Ocon. But because they're teammates and they basically get brought before the stewards and they say to the stewards, we're both at fault, they both just, okay, it's like as if it didn't happen. Okay. So they basically both accepted fault and they get to go on their merry way because they're teammates. I know that's not really maybe that big of a deal. And for a lot of people, it's, you know, they've seen that happen time and time again. But I do think it's one of those things that like, all right, this is dumb. You know, you're going to get in the same race where another guy got a 5-second penalty for in the last lap. This guy, another one completely takes out another driver. Yes, it happened to be his teammate, but another driver, and just gets away with it. I don't know. I'm not really a fan of that at all.
Well, I think that was Basur's statement. Why wasn't Carlos able to kind of plead his case with this? But other drivers were able to, and we all know the Pierre Gasly situation. He's 2 points away from a race ban. He has 2 points expiring next month, which will kind of take him a little closer out of that danger zone, but not much. And I don't know. Maybe that was a team decision. Hey, we're both gonna claim responsibility for this because we can't afford to lose Pierre for a race. I don't know, but if you're gonna allow one team to plead their case but not allow Ferrari to plead their case, that's just shit, in my opinion.
Well, and it's not just signs, right? It's other drivers have been allowed to go to the FIA afterwards and kind of plead their case, so to speak. Which is probably a whole nother issue in and of itself. Should you be allowed to plead your case? Should it matter? I don't know. But I mean, you know, even Alonso last week, or two races ago, sorry, you know, he was able to essentially plead his case, and the team was able to plead their case, and they got the penalty overturned, which rightfully so. I thought it was a just call to overturn that. But why is that, you know, like why is it allowed in certain circumstances? Why is it not allowed in others?
But see, this
especially with something that happened so late in the race.
Yeah. And this is where people say, oh, it'd be, you know, F1 isn't political. Is this a political move? And is it political? I don't know.
It's all politics. It really is. It's all politics.
Exactly. quickly. Like, we can't avoid these conversations because, I mean, we're sitting here for the past 45 something minutes talking about pretty much the politics of F1, what dictates Formula One is this governing body that decides things for them. And it's not working. It's none of it. It is working. The cost cap isn't working. The penalties aren't working. These race decisions aren't working. None of it's working right now. And, you know, people are mad when a race goes without incident because that, you know, and Max is leading by, you know, by a whole lap in some cases, it seems like. And people get mad and say, oh, there's not enough. There's not, the racing sucks. We automatically know what's going to happen on this race. I'm bored, et cetera, et cetera. But would you rather have a race that's safe where you know you're going to have the cars and entering the garages at the end without damage? Or would you rather have races where they're just chaotic disasters? I think I'd rather go the safe route, but I think the FIA, there's a lot that they can do to ensure that. And like I said, that millions of dollars of damage happened to these cars and it didn't have to be that way.
Yeah. Yeah. In a cost cap, you know, era that we're in now, it definitely makes you think about what the consequences of these situations are. And, you know, you would have to think that it is going to affect these teams sooner rather than later, right? In terms of developments, upgrades, maybe even travel. I don't know, but you know, to have races that are, to have a race like this one, constant restarts, all this stuff, like Alpine probably, if we really think about this, Alpine might have could have one of the biggest gripes with that, even though it was their own doing between their driver or because of their driver, but they had damage to both cars, massive damage to both cars. That's a huge hit to the cap for them to have to now, both cars need to get completely, you know, whatever, refixed or different parts. Both cars, massive. If that last red flag didn't happen and they just finish it under the safety car, like we, most of us believe should have happened, that doesn't occur. So again, I'm going to stick to my point that I believe in the best interest of the teams, in the best interest of, you know, viewers, I do think that F1 has to, who knows, they may be, right? They may be talking with the FIA at some point and saying like, yeah, this can't keep happening. This kind of stuff can't keep happening. We can't have these types of situations happening in races that are dictating, outcomes essentially for our teams that are going to be penalized for those outcomes, or penalized for having to, you know, make it more exciting. Like there has to come a time where this all is going to come to a head. It has to. It absolutely has to.
Well, I think at the very least they could say, okay, we know that the cars keep getting bigger. We know that the tracks, they're not conducive to the sizes of the cars. We know that our inconsistencies are causing probably a lot more damage to these cars than they should. So, hey, as us, the FIA, we should maybe have an incident budget that, you know, kind of puts away $5, $10 million or whatever it is that these teams can use in case of incidences that are not caused by the teams themselves, per se, like the shit show debacle that was the final restart in Australia. I mean, I think that's something that teams would get behind, having that oh shit budget, so to speak.
I think it's reasonable.
Yeah.
To an extent. I don't know how you, I'm not sure how you manage that. And again, the FIA seems to prove time and time again that language is not the strong suit because there's always so much ambiguity in all this stuff. So, you know, what constitutes damage? What constitutes, I don't want to say a free change or something, but what constitutes tapping into that budget? If I go and knock my front end plate off of my wing at the, you know, on a cool down lap or something, or purposely bump someone just so that I can now call this damage and I can get a free, I don't know, I can manufacture a whole new front wing, whatever. Again, I'm making something up. I don't really know the technical aspect of it, but, you know, you start creating more questions than answers. So I don't disagree with it. I think that's a good idea. It's just implementing that idea and making sure that idea is not taken advantage of, because these teams will find loopholes in that, obviously.
What we need is a higher body than the FIA to start checking the FIA. Because if the FIA can't do its job correctly the first time, then, I mean, we can't sit there through 1 hour plus race delays. That's insane. Like, you want to talk about a fast way to lose followers, to lose fans? That's how you do it. You start to, and I notice this with football games. People complain a lot about how football games have gotten longer. And they don't want to sit through that. They're like, I have other things I want to do today. I don't want to sit through a 4 hour football game. So, yeah. You know, it's just like the NFL is starting to have those discussions on how we can start streamlining officiating to make these games reduce the time. You know, F1 has to look at that too, because for a lot of these races, West Coast, Central, Eastern time zones in the US, you've got Canada, Mexico, etc. They have to wake up a lot earlier than, you know, people in the UK. And a lot of these races are based in the UK. So it's like, if somebody is going to give you their entire Sunday morning or midnight or whatever it is, then, yeah, don't take advantage of that.
I agree. I'm at the point where I no longer want to be talking about a race because of officiating, right? Essentially, ever again. I really don't. I couldn't care less. Give me real action. Give me real on-track battles. Give me real drama on the track, because that's what, you know, that's what makes this all so fun, not manufactured, artificial, you know, opportunities to get people going, ooh, ah, because I don't know anybody that's a newer fan that found what happened in Australia exciting. And I got a lot of text messages this past weekend from folks that are newish to the sport, and some that are lifelong viewers, and that were just like lifelong viewers saying, I wasted my time, and newer fans going, I had no idea what happened, but I turned it off after there was a massively long delay during that third, or maybe it was the second red flag. I can't remember. There was one where it was really long, the wait. And they're like, I had no interest. The race was over anyway. I just didn't even bother, you know, or I didn't understand what was going on. This is dumb. I just thought this was dumb. I got a lot of text messages saying, this is stupid. What is going on? You know, that's not, I don't want to hear that. I don't want that.
When it seems like the FIA doesn't even know what's going on, you know, obviously fans are going to lose interest. They're going to be like, they're making stuff up as they're going behind the scenes. Like, you know, at least have some transparency to it. At least in situations like that, put a camera in the room and let us see how these decisions are being made. If you're going to take that much time out of people's days just to make these decisions, then again, give us transparency. Let us know how you came to that conclusion. I don't think that's asking for too much. I think that that is reasonable. And I think that teams probably more than anyone have the most to gain by that.
I don't know. My brain is totally tapped on this topic. I honestly have gotten to the point where I can't even think about it.
I'm ready for this break. What about you?
Again, I am feeling like this break to me feels like the break at the end of 21, or, well, not really 21, but the end of last year, after it was like, I am so glad it's over, because, you know, Max was just drubbing everybody by the end of the season, and it didn't matter. And you know, my team didn't really have a shot. And so I felt like, okay, I need a good break. And now I'm already this early in the season. Now, we were supposed to get a race in China on the 16th of April. So there wasn't supposed to be this big gap. But we get a big gap. And I'll tell you, I'm super grateful for it. I want to create content about things that are going on in behind the scenes. There's a ton of stuff happening behind the scenes that are actually really interesting. But what I'm seeing on the track is just almost not alluring. And I don't know if I have it in me to sit through more terribly officiated racing, and just not good racing, really. I mean, I kind of, Baku usually does end up giving us like a decent race, but it is another street track. So, you know, it could be the best race we've ever seen, or it could just be like another just crapper. I don't know if there's going to be an in between on this one. And so I am fearful of that, especially if I was a new fan. But yeah, I'm so happy for this break.
Luckily, next week we will be getting back to regularly scheduled business programming, because there's going to be a lot to talk about, as there usually is with F1. Unfortunately, it was overshadowed this week by the debacle that was Australia. But anyway, hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Again, kind of straying from our normal programming, but I don't know. Anything else to add?
No, I've got nothing to add. Only thing I want is for you lovely listeners, go to your favorite podcast player, leave us a 5-star rating and review. That's what helps us get into the earbuds of new listeners, and it makes us feel really good. Again, if you have a question that you want answered on the show, leave it in the comment of a rating and review, or the review, and we'll drop it on the show for sure.
Indeed. Well, I am VF Castro. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at the VF Castro. Vincenzo, where can people find you?
At Vincenzo Landino, pretty much everywhere. Or there might be a "the" on Instagram, but Vincenzo Landino will find me. Yeah, there is one on Instagram, I know.
All right, guys, we will talk to you again next week.
Later.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.